Hey, Becca, what's the best platform to sell an online course with?
The only answer is Kajabi. It's an all-in-one platform where you can host your course or your membership and your blog and your website and a podcast and your email all in one.
And even better, you can get a free 30-day trial of Kajabi to see why we love it so much.
See the links below or head to teachwellonline.com/Kajabi to get a 30-day free trial. And you can play around with your course, with your membership, and see all the tools it has to offer to grow your business.
If you want to teach well online, know how to teach to the masses.
Welcome to the Teach Well Online podcast, where we believe anyone can teach well if they know how. We are in a series walking through the entire alphabet, A to Z, on how you can show up and teach well online. Welcome to the letter M.
When you go to teach online, you are teaching to a lot of people. That can be both a good thing and a challenging thing. And how do you navigate that? I'm really excited because in this episode, we are interviewing Dr. Tiffany Urich.
Dr. Tiffany Urich loves the way that a well-told story can change the trajectory of a brand. And that's why she created Tiffany Urich Communications, a visibility firm that helps business owners tell their stories through game-changing media mentions, social strategies, and dynamic visuals. She's an author, an entrepreneur, a former TV personality, and university professor. Dr. Tiffany has helped businesses of all kinds, from solo endeavors just starting out to billion-dollar industry luxury brands get and keep their customers. Her expertise has been featured in places like Forbes, PR Couture, CEO Nation, and she's helped clients land features in publications that you can probably name and recognize. When she isn't working with business owners, Tiffany spends her time with family or adding to her growing list of hobbies. And today, we get to interview her. I have known Dr. Tiffany Urich for many years now. In fact, she was my personal media strategist, and we brought her in to help us spread to the masses, which she very effectively did. She even got us a full page feature in Parents Magazine, where I shared sleep strategies for parents. And that was a huge win for us. I still can't believe that happened.
It's one of my favorite pictures that we have today. It was a picture. I remember we went to about four or five different local stores. It's hard to find real print copies of anything now, but we found one.
Yes.
Haven't framed it yet, but I remember you have a picture of you holding it, and it's a picture of you on Parents Magazine. I'm like, yes, so that's my cool wife.
And so she, not only that, but she helped us reach so many people through podcast interviews, which is why we wanted her on here. We were like, okay, we knew that the letter M should be about the masses. So we definitely need Tiffany to join us, and get ready because she is an incredible teacher. That's why we wanted to have her on here. So that's going to be an incredible interview that we'll talk about in a minute, but it made me reminisce about our podcast. So as just like we're coming to you into your headphones or your car, wherever you're listening. For five solid years, we ran the Little Z's Sleep podcast. And this was just an idea that I had because keeping up with blogs was really difficult for me. I am a talker. And so in 2018, we decided to launch a podcast because it would be so much easier for me to just sit down and speak what I was trying to get out to parents instead of sitting down to type it out. This turned out to be the best decision we ever did for Little Z's. Would you agree?
Totally.
Yes.
For many reasons. Let's talk about why. It was so cool for you to be able to sit behind a mic and whatever you were saying just goes straight to people's ears. So like you would have mothers who would be feeding their kids in the middle of the night and they would literally just pop their headphones in and just binge your podcasts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People left us reviews all the time saying, I'm rocking my baby to sleep, learning how to, you know, make sleep a thing for our family. You know, this is going to be awesome. Another reason the podcast was so effective for us was that it provided content for people to have more accessibility to me and my education, not just through Instagram and not just through a blog, but I would go to pediatrician's offices to connect with people. And I would go and the pediatricians had been listening to my podcast to learn things to tell their patients, which was like, what? That's mind blowing. My favorite part of the podcast was doing interviews. That's how I got connected with Slumber Pod early on in the beginning. Now they're just a gigantic company. I've gotten connected with so many people through relationships as podcast guests, but there was one that never made it on air. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. Well, reminisce about.
And you're teasing out one of the biggest challenges of teaching to the masses. It sounds great that your voice can be heard to so many people, but there comes some difficulties with that when maybe you say something really, really wrong, or the person that you're talking to might not be the right fit.
Yes. When you decide to teach to the masses, you have to be, you got to be on, right? This can, and you also have to be authentic, which is, again, it kind of builds all the episodes we've talked about. But there is a point when you know our podcast had reached the number 2 global pediatric ranking on podcast. Amazing, super incredible honor. If you are ranked as, you know, a high listened download podcast, you need to be careful about how you are presenting your education to the masses. So this one time I had a guest on, it was like a connection through a connection, and it sounded great. Like the topic sounded good. She wanted to talk about. She wanted to talk about the child's nursery and how to create a space that was, I forget the word of it, but it was like, I think it was eco-happiness. I think that's what it was. It was a made up word, but basically she wanted to talk about nursery setup. And I had only ever talked about the sleep side of it. I hadn't really talked about the, you know, setup of, I guess, the design of it. And so I said, yes. So I meet this lady on Zoom and I can immediately tell this is going to be bad. I am pulling teeth to try to get her to talk, to try to say things. She's saying things that are like so commonplace, like how if you painted the room blue, it'd be calming like water, or how you could use browns to elicit nature feelings. I'm like, none of this is any good whatsoever. I know this just by like looking at a box of crayons. And I was so frustrated and I never ended up publishing her episode. She emailed me several times. I finally got up the courage to say, listen, this is not something that I think that I know my audience, my masses would actually appreciate and listen to, and it would not be good for my brand. And I had to say no. And I never published that. And I even ended the episode really early. I remember it only lasted 15 minutes, my interview with her, because I realized right away, this is not a good fit. I cannot bring this to my masses because I've established who my audience is and they trust me and they follow me. I can't serve them this dish. They're not gonna like it.
And that gets into one of the questions that I asked Dr. Tiffany Urich about. So we're going to jump to her interview. It is gold. We cover 3 main things. The first is which at Teachable Online, we talk a lot about needing to connect the right content to the right people. One of the things that she says on her website and she teaches all the time is that having something great isn't going to do you any good if you don't know how to get it in front of people. So she talks a lot about that. We also talk about how when you teach to the masses, what are some best practices? What are some things that maybe you should consider doing and saying? And what are some things that maybe you should avoid doing and saying when you're dealing with a lot of people? And then finally, we ended our interview by just talking about how to stay engaging and fun to listen to and to be a presence that people want to keep coming back to. So with that, here is our interview with Dr. Tiffany Urich.
Okay, y'all, welcome to Tiffany. She is bringing us a wealth of knowledge today. Dr. Tiffany Urich, I have known her for several years now. She actually did some PR work with us at Little Z's, helped me get into Parents Magazine and all kinds of platforms to increase our visibility to the masses. And so someone, we were deciding on this episode, Chad and I both knew like, oh, yep, this is a good letter for Tiffany. And so I'm excited for you to be here. Can you share with us who you are and what you have to bring to the table today as we talk about reaching the masses?
Becca, Chad, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. And as always, it's a delight to get to be a part of your community. I think that the podcast that you guys are creating and Teach Well and the entire concept around it is so desperately needed in the digital business landscape right now. And I truly think that you guys have one of the best podcasts on the market right now. It's been a delight to listen to. And if I can just shout it out really quickly, if your audience hasn't listened to episode I, where you're talking about imitation versus information, after this is over, definitely go back and listen to that. I think it's maybe one of the best pieces of content I've ever come across on the internet. It's amazing.
Oh man, Chad is just beaming because he wrote it all. It's so good.
I just made a note to go back and listen to it myself.
Yeah, it made me want to learn to play the guitar after I listened to it. But no, it was amazing. And so I think what you're creating is phenomenal. I think that it is such an important piece in the market right now. And so I'm delighted to be here. But in terms of my background, so I have a PhD in communications and I was a university professor for many years before I started my business. And so I have a visibility solutions business where basically we help people get their brand and their message seen by more people. You know, because you've heard me say say this, but I love to say that being a best kept secret, it's a great compliment, but it is a terrible business model. And so that's what my business does. We take people by the hand and we help get their business in front of other eyes. And so, yes, we had so much fun getting Becca into Parents Magazine. And if you can think of pretty much any major publication, we've gotten a client in there in mainstream publications, from creatives to artists. I've worked with international luxury brands that you have heard of. And I've worked with solo entrepreneurs that are just getting started. And I firmly believe that there is a way for any business at any stage to get their business, their story in front of their ideal client, get greater visibility. If you can take the time to really understand where that business at, what stage of growth it's at, and what is the best tactic and the best strategy to employ to get that business in front of them.
Oh man, you are the perfect person for me to ask this big question then. So one of the core beliefs that we have at Teach Well Online that we've talked about a lot is that you have to connect the right content to the right people. You can't teach the wrong stuff to what you think is the right people. You can't teach the right stuff to what is the wrong people, because then it's just not going to lead to sales. And I saw this on your website. I've heard you say this before, and you said it doesn't matter how good you are if no one knows you exist, that well-kept secret. And those two things marry so perfectly. Like, you have to teach the right people the right content. But once you've figured that part out, it doesn't matter unless you know how to get in front of people. So could you just talk, just as a visibility expert, what are some ways that people can get their content in front of people?
I'm so glad that you set that up and said it that way, because it's so true. You have to teach the right content to the right people, and getting your message in front of audiences is really the same thing. It's all about getting the right content at the right time to the right people. And so one of the things that I tell people first and foremost is that you need to know where your audience is hanging out. And the great thing about all of the research and the steps that you guys are teaching people is about how to find that audience, all of that applies towards the marketing end of it as well, getting that message in front of the masses. So for instance, let's say that I wanted to teach marketing strategies to dentists, right? Like, there's very specific places that I'm going to try to get my message to reach that ideal client. I need to find out where those dentists are hanging out so I can give them my marketing advice. If I'm hanging out in places where wedding professionals are, you know, the wedding industry, or I'm hanging out where artists are, I'm getting a message to those people, but it's not the right message to the right people. So my message isn't going to connect with them, and I'm not going to get the ideal client that I want because I'm not in front of them. So it's pretty simple. I mean, that's just the first step, is understanding where does your ideal client already hang out? And then how can you leverage the power of that channel or that media in order to get your message to that ideal client? So one example from my own business, I early on in my business did a lot of different podcast interviews, just trying to get the word out about my business. And one of those podcast interviews increased my email list by 1,071%.
Good gracious.
Yeah. So that was a fantastic choice, because my ideal client that wanted what I was talking about was hanging out there. I kid you not. 3 weeks later, I did a podcast interview with another podcaster that I thought at the time had a lot of my ideal client in it, a very large podcast. I had one person join my email list.
Oh my gosh.
One. And this was a couple years ago. Like, this is several years ago. One person joined my email list from that first podcast interview. I still have people joining that list. And it's been years. From the second one, 3 weeks later, one person. And so that's just a very in your face sort of story from my own business about the power of really taking the time to understand where is your ideal audience already hanging out. And so that's the first thing. The second thing I would say is, don't put all of your eggs in one basket. So we have this tendency to think in terms of the one thing that I'm going to do, like Instagram Reels, or the one thing I'm going to do, I'm going to get in magazines, or I'm going to have a blog. And none of those, I mean, all of those things are great. They can all work really well for you. But unfortunately, they're not really letting you utilize the full extent of the strategy and the tactics available to you. And so I really like to help people understand that marketing is an umbrella, and every business at every stage has different tactics that are going to work really well for it, and others that aren't going to yield great results. So I like to think of it in terms of an acronym called ROPES. And this is what I consider my umbrella for marketing. And so R is relational. These are things like testimonials, word of mouth. Fantastic place to start when you're just getting started and you want to build social proof and credibility. The second, the O, is for owned media. These are things that you control the channel and the message, so you get to control how it's distributed. These are things like your email, things like your blog, your website, your podcast. All right. Then we have P, and that is paid media. Those are your advertisements. Advertising can be great because you can always buy more eyes on your media or on your brand, but it works best if you have a little more growth under your belt and you know what you're doing, you know what you have to offer, and you have really great messaging and marketing material built out. E is earned media. That's what we would consider publicity, where you're getting in magazines, doing podcast interviews, those kinds of things. And then the S is shared media. And shared media is your social media channels. That is a channel where you control the content, but you don't control the distribution. And so each of those different elements of marketing have pros and cons. They each have benefits. They each have disadvantages. And at different stage of your business, different aspects of that marketing umbrella are better for you, are going to get you the clients that you're looking for. And so it's really about understanding all of these tactics that are available to you under that larger marketing strategy. And so get creative, realize that you can get more eyes on your business. If you're an expert in an area and you like to talk about it, you can really articulate those ideas clearly, or you're willing to learn how to do that. Podcast interviews are fantastic because it's long form. You can explain, you can teach. But if you have perhaps a product, something like a magazine feature featuring your product would be great. If you are just getting started, really focusing on getting some solid testimonials and getting word of mouth, that can be a really great way to get started. Building out your own content, like your blogs, like your email list. These are all different strategies, different tactics within that larger marketing strategy. So that's tip number two.
I'm going to ask you a quick little brief question on that. So thinking through someone who is like, wow, these are I love this. I don't want to put all my eggs into the one basket. I want to diversify. I want to try to get out there. How, I'm thinking through what comes, first, the chicken or the egg, the cart before the horse. You don't have a course yet, and someone who's but I don't have anything for the masses. I'm a one-on-one, or I have just a product. Would you still say it's worthwhile to pursue all of these different avenues so that even when you are ready to scale, it's just going to help you even more? It has more credibility, because I do think that some people assume, oh, I can't really get all these things going because, I'm just one person. What's your pep talk to someone like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so what I would say is all of these things can, at different stages of your business, be incredibly helpful in driving clientele and driving sales and conversions. But I wouldn't do them all at once to start with, because what happens is you end up ping-ponging, it's shiny object syndrome and you're all over the place. So I would create a path and start working on things, one thing at a time, and building. If you're doing one-to-one services right now, focus on pulling in those testimonials, getting those established on your site so that when someone does come to your site and they see that you're selling a course, here's this proof of concept, right? Here you've got this social proof. Other people are saying this worked for me and it will work for you. And so do that. If you love getting on social media and you get great engagement and interaction there, do that. But start with one thing that you're going to focus on and build up, then add the next, then add the next. And you get that. We were talking about the snowball effect earlier before we were recording. You're building that snowball. You're packing in the snowball. I love the way Becca said that, and getting ready to, let it roll. And so add a concept or a tactic at a time, and really get good at that. Get good results, or give it the opportunity to see if you're getting results from it at this stage. And it's not that we're moving from one thing to the other, it's that we're building things out. So I really love having people start with their own media. So get your email marketing in, get your, if you do a blog or whatever kind of content, if you're a content creator, in your business, get that settled. Get your testimonials, that social proof in place, and then start looking at your paid, your earned, and your shared media. If you go to my business, if you look at my account on Instagram, you'll notice that there's one post there, and that's very intentional. We even say in the biography, in that bio, we're intentionally quiet on Instagram. And there's a very good reason for that. And it's because I used Instagram for quite some time. And when we sat down and we looked at the data, we looked at the analytics, this is why I'm a big fan of data and numbers. We could see that we'd never sold courses, sales, services, anything from Instagram, but it was taking up a ton of time. So we keep that account and explain, hey, you know, we're intentionally quiet here because we put that effort into other ways of generating clientele that have been so much more successful. And yet I work with artists who being on Instagram is really key to their success. And so to a certain extent, it's really getting the chance to understand your business and giving yourself the time to be able to try something long enough to see if it does work before you begin adding other things on it.
One of the things that I hear you saying, I bet people are thinking, wow, I thought doing online education and creating an online course and selling it was easy. And what I could summarize what you're saying is that it takes work. I think about like the common leadership principle of like a good leader that gets down low, humbles himself, gets their ear to the ground, listens to their people. And what you're saying is like, you got to do the work. Like you got to know where your people are. You've got to really invest in creating those channels in order to sell it. Because again, what good is having great content if you don't do the work to get it out there? And that's doing the work before you do the work, you know?
Yeah. And you know, I've never actually told anybody this on a podcast before, but when I first got started, I think I had this idea that I was a college professor. I had a PhD. This is what I do. I've done it for over 20 years for a living. So all I needed to do was get it there, put up that website, put out that class and bam, you know, you build it, everybody's going to come. And as you well know, that's not how it works. And so I think a lot of people get into it thinking, oh, it's totally passive income. I'll build it once. And then it's totally on autopilot. And you can get to a point where it is, but there is kind of that in the trenches zone where you've really got to build out those channels. You've got to build trust. You have to get that machine going, get that snowball rolling before you have the freedom to kind of step back. And so there is work involved and there's diligence and discipline and consistency, but it can be so rewarding to get to build those communities and teach people and build a business that way.
Which is awesome to think through. And I love the ROPES acronym that you gave us because people think, oh, I have a course. Oh, it's immediately going to go to the masses. And I confess that that's kind of what I thought was like, oh, you put a course and you're just now going to be teaching to the masses. But when you start to teach to the masses, there's not like, if you want to get to the top of the mountain or you want to climb the staircase, you still have to go up the stairs. You still have to get to that point. So it's not just, you know, you put out a course and bam, your course anyone could buy. So therefore I am teaching to the masses. It's a lot more thoughtful than that. So I appreciate your insight on that.
I heard someone one time say, you can't outsource your pushups. It's kind of like that. You know, you have to do the work at a certain point. Yeah. You can outsource some stuff later, but you're right. You still have to climb the mountain. You still have to get up that staircase.
And I think after you consider the work that it takes to get in front of a lot of people, then there is the, wait a second, I'm in front of a lot of people. And there's a beauty to that, but there's also a risk to that too, because, you know, where you might consider a small slip up with a little bit of people, that's one thing. But all of a sudden, if maybe you make a mistake or you say the wrong thing, or you're not in line with best practices, all of a sudden you're out there and everybody can see it and it can become a potential nightmare. But kind of shifting gears a little bit, are there any good best practices, things that you should definitely do, maybe some things that you should potentially avoid when you are teaching a lot of people?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And actually, that touches on something that I think very few people say, and I think it's important to understand, this was encouraging for me for sure, is that when we get started, many of us think, okay, it's going to be overnight. And in 6 months, if you're not making, you know, a seven figure, you're not making $6 million on your course sales or whatever within 6 months, you've done something wrong. And I think there's a lot of messaging out there right now that can be, that is, not saying that it didn't work that way for people. I'm just saying that I think there's a lot of messaging that sets unrealistic expectations for people.
We are not in our heads.
Yeah.
Right along with you. Right?
About the time it's going to take, the consistency, the diligence that it's going to take to build. But at the beginning, you have a very distinct advantage because, Chad, like you said, you have some anonymity there. You can make some mistakes. You can make some changes. You may say, I'll never do this. And then a couple months later, you're like, actually, yeah, I think I'm going to do that. I can see now the benefit of that. And so really appreciate those early stages and the freedom that you have to make some mistakes or to make some changes without everybody, you know, knowing about it and having an opinion about it. So really embrace that. Use that time where you're smaller at the beginning to really develop those best practices. really get the hang of things. So you're not all of a sudden making massive mistakes in front of huge amounts of people. But we're talking about that idea of communicating to a large group. What are some best practices? And first and foremost, I would say, instead of teaching in your head, quote, to the masses, teach to one person. And this is something that I used to teach all the time. So as a professor and somebody that worked in the world of broadcasting for a lot of years, I worked with many, many people who are on camera in different news organizations or different broadcast outlets. And the biggest thing to teach them is how to connect with the audience on the other side. And this is very much like teaching in an online course, really creating any kind of online content where you're working with people. And the tendency is to think in your head, in your mind, I'm talking to this whole great big group of people. But you have to remember that the person on the other side is one person. You're talking to a bunch of individual people, just one person's, just a whole lot of them. And so I can teach you how to write. I can teach you how to modulate your voice. I can, you know, sound like a reporter. I can teach you all of these different things, but that's the hardest thing to teach you is how to make a personal connection, what we call parasocial interactionism. That's my research term I'll throw out there. But how do you make that connection with people? And so one of the things I would do with my students from the very beginning when they would come through and I'd be training people, I'll do this with media training as well in my business, is I tell them that they need to have a face. So what I'll have them do is think about someone who is someone that's very important to them, someone that they want that information to come to them and be clear and be honest and be full of integrity and envision that person's face. And then I have them draw that face. And most of us are not artists. And so it's like a little stick figure type face. But then we would tape that little stick figure on the camera lens so that as they were learning, they were always looking at this person, whether it's, you know, Aunt Ruth or mom or your little sister or your brother or your dad or your best friend or whomever it is, that face was in front of them. And so they would have to kind of smile and grin, but then it would be that reminder that I'm talking to somebody on the other side who is an actual real person with real needs, real hopes and dreams, real concerns, great expectations for how what I'm creating is going to help them. And so that's the first thing that I say is that don't ever get into this mindset that I'm just teaching to a faceless mass. I'm teaching to an individual person, and that's the experience on the other end. And so talk like that. Talk like you're talking to one person. You know, if you and I were having this conversation and I couldn't see your faces and I was just envisioning, you know, hundreds of thousands of people listening to it on the other end, and that was what was in my head, I would sound very different than just having a conversation with my friends, right?
True. So, there's this marketing concept where if you're talking to everyone, you're talking to no one.
Exactly.
And so if you, I love that. If you approach teaching a concept where either it's your craft, your skill, your story, and you're like, oh, I'm talking, yes, to all these people, you're lost then. You're talking to no one. If you're talking to everyone, you're talking to no one. Such a good point.
And when you can think of them as individual people, I think it makes it a little bit easier to think through potential problems, potential things that you might say that you wish you hadn't said, because when people are faceless, we don't really think about their needs or their backgrounds or their histories. When they're individuals, we are more attuned to thinking about how are they going to hear this? How are they going to receive this? And I'm a big fan of thinking first before you speak, you know, really considering how it's going to sound on the other end or how it could be misinterpreted. We know that everyone's going to interpret what they hear through the filter of their own experience. And so really taking time to consider what objection might they have or what concern might they have in the way that I say this. And so really getting into the habit, first and foremost, of seeing people as individuals, not a faceless mass.
We had that same, what you just described, we had that problem early on with our courses for Little Z's, because and it's interesting to tie what you just said together with, you know, these two concepts of speak to this one person, but also know that everyone comes in differently. And so in my sleep plans, we had always said, mom, dad, you know, okay, mom, you may need dad to do this. But once we got on the masses and started to scale things, we started getting emails from people who were like, I'm a solo parent, you know, which one of these paths is for me? Or I'm fostering, or I'm the grandparent, I'm the caregiver. It wasn't just mom or dad. And it reminded us that like, oh, yep, this is very different now. I'm not creating personalized plans for everyone. This is now something that needs to be, you know, for anyone in their walk of life. And so we had to change things. We had to change the wording. And instead of saying, you know, he or she in the plan who said baby, because again, it was too much to go through the entire plan reading it as put he or she down. It was like, oh, let's just say baby, or mom or dad saying caregiver, things like that. It's definitely something that we had to learn through the fire, getting lots of email inquiries about that.
I'm nodding over here. Yeah, I totally understand. Completely understand. And this is where it's so important to do your research. Like, just talk to as many people as you can. So this works for when you're building your content. This works for when you're building your marketing. Talk to as many of your ideal client as you can. Learn everything you can about them. Like, if you see somebody out in the grocery store, do the most awkward thing and be like, hey, I'm doing this. Can I ask you a few questions? Like, as much as you can learn about people, learn about them, because we do have a tendency to build material out of our own frame of reference, right? And so to get out of that frame of reference and understand how other people are going to receive that material, you need to talk to them. And so you need to, if you're like, well, I'm a total introvert, I don't like talking to people, there's a point at which you kind of have to get over yourself if you want to grow a business, and you have to do tough, uncomfortable things and stretch yourself a little bit. The good news is, when you stretch yourself a little bit, that becomes your new comfort zone. And so then you do another hard thing and you stretch yourself a little bit more, and that becomes your new comfort zone. And so you are actively increasing your zone of comfort so that you can do harder and more challenging and more uncomfortable things for the sake of growing a business and serving people really well.
Speaking of uncomfortable, kind of what you just said is, when you are teaching to the masses and maybe you do make a mistake, or you don't consider, oh, I should probably think about maybe the single parents or everything like that, you get a lot of feedback. You get a lot of emails, you get a lot of feedback, and some of it can kind of cut to the heart. Some of it can be hard to deal with. And you're faced with, like, you have to kind of, all that to say, what has made us the strongest, what has helped us become better teachers and better human beings, was receiving those emails that nobody ever wants to receive. Responding to them can be a challenge. And you know, you want to be a kind, gracious human being, but it hurts sometimes to get feedback, especially from people that don't know you. I mean, when you're putting your content out there, 90% of the people, maybe even 99% of the people that you're teaching, you don't know. You don't have a relationship with them, but they will definitely speak up when you mess up. And so maybe just kind of a quick curveball question for you. Do you have any advice on, like, okay, I'm now teaching to the masses and now I'm starting to get feedback and that feedback hurts, and that, like, how do you typically respond or deal with that?
Sure. That is such a great question. So the first thing I would say is walk away. Just walk away for a minute.
I love that answer. How many emails we actually never answered or replied to?
Right, just like Becca, don't.
You can spend your entire life and career just responding to emails, and not all of them need to be responded to. But that said, just take a minute and walk away for a second, because if you immediately hit reply and start typing, until they have a guard on your keyboard that can sense that you're angry typing and stop you. All right, like, until we can all get that on our keyboards, just walk away when something hurts or when you think they don't know what they're talking about. So just step away. Think about it, pray about it, look and see, is there some truth in there? And being able to step away for a little bit gives you a chance to really process it and say, actually, I can see where there's some truth maybe in this. There is good feedback here. It may not be expressed in such a way that I like to hear. It may not be very encouraging. It may not be constructive criticism in the way that it is written, but there is value in the feedback. Know that there are always going to be some people who are just grumpy people. Right? Like, they're just cantankerous people who are just going to be rude. So you get a small, you know, assortment of that. But most of the people that are responding, they probably actually have some really excellent feedback for you there. So step away, give yourself some time to think about it. I also am a huge advocate of having an uninvolved party look at it. Like, if you've got a spouse or a parent or somebody or friend, you know, who loves you, but also their heart and soul isn't wrapped up in this, let them read it, right? And so let them take a look at it and say, okay, let me break this down for you and give you the summary. Here's the points that you need to know. Here's probably what needs to be addressed. Here's what they love about it. And so having somebody else kind of take a look at that and filter it for you can be very helpful as well. And then finally, I would say, really consider which ones do need to be responded to and which ones don't. And when you go to respond, always be gracious and thank them for taking the time out of their busy schedule to let you know that there was a problem. And you can say something. This is actually where having a template can be really, really helpful, because you can write an email template when you're not in a hurt frame of mind or a frustrated frame of mind, and then you can use that and personalize it. And so, you know, thank you for taking the time. Really appreciate this feedback. And we see that this is important to you. So we'll take this under consideration and see what changes we can make or need to make. And so having that new little template can help a lot to keep some of your frustration out of the email when it's sent. And then finally, I would say always have somebody read it first, because when we're talking about email, when we're talking about text, any of these kinds of things, we're talking about asynchronous communication where we are not in the same time, place, you know, they're not going to read it right when we're sending it. We're not having a face-to-face conversation. And so researchers think that 90 to 93% of our communication is interpreted through our nonverbals. That's our tone of voice and our body language and our facial expressions. And all of that is stripped away when you're talking about email or social media or text messaging. And so it's very easy for someone to receive something that was, you felt, stated, you know, clearly and kindly and graciously, and for them to read that, interpret that as I'm totally angry. Like, look at just putting a period on the end of a text message and how some people come unglued, right? Yeah. Because you must be angry because you included proper punctuation.
You know what kills me right now is the angry face. Like I used to not be like an emoji kind of person, but now somebody could just be kindly complaining, like a family member or something, and they'll put that steamy, mad, angry face. I literally get scared. I'm like, oh, you're mad.
It's like the stress level. Yes.
I actually can't stand the worst emoji to me is if you just give me the thumbs up emoji. That, like, I hate that. Like, do not just give me the thumbs up. What does that mean? Does that mean like, sure? Oh, I hate sure too. That's the worst. But like when people just say, sure, thumbs up, I'm like, oh, you really don't want to do that. Okay, fine. You know, like,
okay. Note to self, never send thumbs up.
Don't ever text Becca a thumbs up.
But it's Becca is an affirmation person. And so a thumbs up is kind of sticking it to her. She's that's not affirmation.
That's not affirmation. Okay, good.
But this is such a good, I'm glad you threw that curveball, Chad, because people get very excited when they want to teach to the masses, scale my business. It is exciting. And you know what? That is an exciting ride. And it's an exciting climb up the mountain. And really that mountain never ends. And it's thrilling, but there are some difficulties and there are some challenges, like, you know, responding to comments and things like that. But also even just looking at teaching in general, you know, our goal at TeachWell is to help people learn to be effective communicators, because one of the things that can easily happen on an online platform is learning fatigue, right? And so as people are creating content, do you have any tips from your teaching and PR experience to bring people together and stay engaged to help prevent that learning fatigue and move their content forward?
Absolutely. That's such a good question. I would say even when you have a really big program, like if you grow and that program gets really big, look for ways that you can break it up and make it more of a personal experience. So I have been in a program before where they had small study groups that you could participate in. And this was actually an extra fee in the class, but they put you, you know, there's thousands of people in the program, but they put you in a group of 4 to 5 people. And one time I went through a program that did that, and I actually still regularly communicate with those people. They've become a mini mastermind for me years later. And so that was a really neat way to make a very big program with a lot of the masses in it feel very personal and make it very effective. It was very efficacious. Made a lot of progress because there was somebody there, an accountability group kind of driving me forward. So I think that's one thing that you can do to really bring people together. I think also that really understanding community is really helpful in building a program. That's only going to enhance your program. And I think for some people, the idea of building community comes a little more easily than others. And the work that we do can be very isolating, right? And especially if you are in business by yourself and you don't have a big team or somebody else that's a business partner with you, you kind of feel like you're just sort of out there making a lot of decisions on your own and hoping for the best. And I think that being able to create community is helpful. And so understanding that when someone makes the investment to buy a course or a program or something like that from you, they're at a point in their life when they are ready to make a change. It might be a small change. It might be a massive change. Like it could be that I want to completely overhaul my health. I want to completely overhaul my career or my family or my communication or my skills, my talents, my hobbies, whatever it is. People are usually at a point that they're ready for a change. And not a lot of people know this, but this is actually what I wrote my doctoral dissertation on, is the idea of how do we build thriving communities in an online setting? How do we create and build them? And specifically, what is the individual experience within that community that makes someone want to be a part of it? And so understanding that we're at this crossroads in a person's life and we can come alongside them, they want others who are like-minded to come along with them, right? And to join them on this journey, to know that they're not alone. And so when your audience is craving that like-minded community because they're doing something new, they're doing something that may be intimidating, you can capitalize on that and invite them to become a part of the community with you. So it's not just that content that they're getting, it's you. It's the people around them. It's others who are striving for the same thing. We mentioned this earlier, but I love the episode you guys did on teaching out of imitation rather than information, because there's really nothing new under the sun. We can go get any of the information. For instance, any of the information that I teach on marketing, on public relations, on visibility, you can go find that online. It's there. And so why would you come work with me? Well, it's because of how I've done it. It's because of the results that I consistently get. And it's because I can walk you through that same process and get you those same results. And I heard a friend say this. She said, everything's already been done, but it hasn't been done by you. And so you are the key element to this community, shaping the tenor of the community and the tone and the way people feel. So invite people into that to come alongside you and other like-minded people. And then once they're there, encourage ideas for them to know how to participate. We tend to think, oh, people are going to get in that community and we're all on social media, so they're all going to know how to participate. But people don't. They're intimidated by that. So give them examples. Here's what you can ask. Here's what you can share. Here's some ideas for how you could interact and engage so that you're kind of stimulating that idea. You're brainstorming with them and saying, you might find that this is a helpful way to use this community. You might talk about this. We'd love for you to share this and give some examples of what that might look like. And then also remember that when you do have a community, nobody wants to be the first one. Nobody wants to go first. Very few people do. So have the house ready to go so that when you invite them in, the house is already warm and welcoming. Now, if you have a smaller program, this may be something that you're doing on your own to get started, or you may even hire a virtual assistant to help you with this. As your program grows, I encourage people to reinvest a little bit back into that program to have people that you hire specifically to facilitate community. And so have people that have been through your program before who love it. They'll be your best advocates, your best marketing for the program, who are also coming in, you know, for an hour or two or three or four, whatever, a week, and interacting with and engaging and answering questions. And so that's something that you can set a goal to be building towards as your program grows, if you want to add this community component to it. And so that helps you create a system to make sure that everyone gets a response, because the fastest way to kill community is for people to be posting and then no one ever responds back to them. And so again, this can be a little bit of extra work for you at the beginning, but this is a goal that you're working towards, to have a system in place where you can actually outsource some of that, you know, train and outsource some of that community engagement and building that. And what you're ideally trying to do is you're trying to build toward ownership. Once the people who are a participant in the community take ownership of it and feel that they have a role in the way that it's shaped and the way that's developed, that's when you begin to have a community that just gets on a roll and is going, and it kind of works and organically morphs outside of itself. And community is hard when you add that kind of component, because it's the least controllable aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, teaching is not just a head knowledge. It's a heart and a hand activity. And some of the best teachers are what you're saying, are ones that are able to foster a community. And we just did a podcast episode a couple of weeks ago on like the 31 keys to teaching and delivering. And one of the things that we touched on was, we have always encouraged people, teach live first. You know, before you start teaching online and you do, get people in your house, build that community, actually get to know the people that you're teaching, see how it lands, because some of the best teaching that comes across online is a teaching that has already happened in community with others and bringing people together.
Yeah, I'm in a program right now. And this is one of the things, I love learning. And the more I learn, the more I realize there's more to learn. And so I am always trying to find places where I can increase my understanding or my knowledge in different areas. And so a lot of my operating budget for my business goes to continuing education, to learn. And it teaches me a lot, not just about the subject matter, but about how great courses are run, how community is built. And so I'm in a program right now that's really interesting because it's the very earliest stages. And the person who started it started by just doing free coaching hours where they opened up, you know, Zoom and said, drop in. And I'll ask questions, got into the hang of what kinds of questions are being asked, learning, and she would ask questions back and say, well, tell me about you. Tell me about your struggles. And it was a fantastic way to both give a benefit and useful information, but also to gain so much information about marketing and developing your content. So those free drop-in hours turned to paid coaching hours where you could make an appointment and go more in depth. That turned into sort of a paid group coaching. And now it's a full membership program where new informational content is being taught on a monthly basis. But what was interesting about the way she built it is that all along the way, she was bringing all of these people along with her. And now she's got this thriving community. So when the full program launched, she already had a group of fans who loved working with her, had seen great results. It had been, you know, very little cost to her to be able to build that group, but she had all of the marketing copy that she needed because she knew what people's pain points were. She had, you know, the first year's worth of content, informational content ready to go because she knew what was most important to people. But I think most importantly, she had a group of people who were huge advocates of what she does. They love what she does. They've seen success. And now she's brought them together. So they're learning from each other in that community setting. And that's been really exciting to watch that program develop.
What an amazing, again, like illustration of you can't just be at the top of the mountain. You got to show up. You got, like, there's a thread of perseverance that has gone through this entire conversation of you have to really get to know people. You have to really understand people. You have to understand what you're trying to say. And you have to put yourself out there through all of those different, you know, ropes analogy that you gave us, all these different things. It's like, when you get to the end of this, it's a miracle that so many people out there have online content because it's a lot, but it's definitely something that is achievable, but you have to have that, like, that grit and that perseverance to actually be able to do it well. And what an awesome illustration of someone who built their tribe and just a showing up and then is ready to launch in that. That's such a good story.
And I think what you just touched on is probably the most important thing that I can share. And that's that if you want to build a business, it's all about consistency. And it's all about the investment of time. You know, if we want to get really physically fit, we get that we've got to make changes. Our food has to be consistent. Our working out has to be consistent. You know, nobody does a 10-minute workout once a month and is like, why am I not seeing results? You know, if you want to learn to play the piano, you realize that you can't practice for 15 minutes and then skip a month and then practice for 2 hours and then skip a month and practice for 10 minutes and be a master pianist. Like, we get that it doesn't work that way. But so often when we're trying to build a business, we will bounce from Instagram reels to, you know, sending an email once or twice and then 6 months, you know, going quiet, to trying a podcast episode or trying one ad or you know, two videos on YouTube or something. And we're shocked as we bounce around that we don't have better results. You know, we're shocked that our business hasn't grown. And I have a friend who likes to say that successful people do consistently what average people do occasionally. Mm. And I think that that is kind of convicting, but also really helpful to understand that, that if you will pick a path, you know, and this actually goes back to one of those other techniques for really helping keep people engaged and motivated is create a roadmap, give them a path, create a clear path for where they're going, give them a roadmap, do the same for yourself. create a roadmap and a path, and then give yourself the time to see how it works. You can always make changes, but if you won't do the work and you won't consistently, diligently do that work over and over again and give it the time to see if it gets results, you'll never know. There's a book that I read called The 12-Week Year. And one of the things that he basically is talking about is quite often when people don't achieve goals, it's not because the plan was bad. It was because the execution was inconsistent. And I think that's really critical when you're creating your content, building your audience and your community, building your marketing material and strategy, really making the effort to be consistent. And another friend of mine likes to say, the bad news is most people are quitters. The good news is most people are quitters. That means if you can hang in there, right, you're already going to have an advantage. You're going to have the edge over everybody who's quitting. So give yourself the freedom to commit to being consistent and diligent and see what it does.
Yeah, I hope we didn't scare anybody away from wanting to teach online, but I hope all of this is just good encouragement that like it does take the work. And honestly, that is a message that we try to preach. And it being on this side of it, we've sold a lot of courses. We know what it's like to teach the masses, but we didn't get there just out of luck. It takes work. And I think that's something that a lot of marketing and business coaches kind of like to hide, and that's okay. But the reality is it takes work, but you can be successful if you're consistent. And if you apply a lot of these things that you said, like I could just keep listening to you for another hour. I mean, I'm taking notes over here.
Tiffany, we have a notes doc on the side and I just see him typing.
I'm so glad. There's no test afterward either. So you're good to go.
Excellent.
And that's why having someone who can come alongside you, who has done this and done this successfully before, can give you the roadmap and help you on your journey. That's why that's so critical. And I think that's why what you guys are doing is hitting such a wonderful place in the market. There's a huge hole in the market. And what you're doing to say, yeah, there's a ton of content out there and a lot of it's bad. Let's make your stuff good and let's teach you how to get it in front of the right people. I think that's so valuable. And just having the advantage of having someone come alongside you who's done this before and can show you how to do it is helpful. And then you are going to turn around and in your own content, your own course, do the same thing. You know, take somebody by the hand and walk them through the success that you have had. But I think what I want people to hear is that if you aren't, you know, a multimillionaire within 3 weeks of starting your business, you're not doing something wrong. It's not like you're messing up and doing wrong. That's the messaging that we get. It is about time and diligence, but it's so rewarding. And if you take the time to build the foundations now, you'll have wonderful longevity.
Yeah. And celebrate the small wins.
Absolutely.
Don't throw those away. Like every purchase that happened while you were sleeping at night, celebrate that. You know, so many times we feel like we have to get to the top of the mountain. Just enjoy the process of going up and not going down.
Yeah. The first time that phone dings and says purchase made, have a party.
Absolutely. This was incredibly helpful, Tiffany. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. Chad's so right. Like I could just sit here and be like, yes, Tiffany, keep talking. You mentioned that you do voiceover work. I'm like, yes, keep talking. Like,
I feel like I learned a lot about you and I felt like I knew you pretty well from working with you. And then I'm like, you did this? You do what? Wow.
Awesome. When you spend a lot of years in the industry, the Lord has opened doors to do a lot of really cool things.
Yeah.
I love it. I know I said at the beginning of this, like you were one of the most interesting people. I learned more things about you every time I talk to you. Like you have six dogs and cats and ducks and
no
all
cats.
These amazing.
Deathly allergic to cats.
Okay. Minus the cats. You're just such a fascinating person to learn from. And I appreciate you being here. So thank you for just everything that you shared with us. This was incredibly helpful. How can people connect with you if they're like, oh, I definitely need you in my life to help reach the masses?
Sure. And it's such an honor to be here. And I'm so pleased that you guys invited me to be here. My website is tiffanyurich.com. And that's Tiffany, like the jewelry store, and then Urich, EURICH.com. And you can find everything there. Or it's Dr. Tiffany Urich on Instagram, which, as we mentioned before, will shoot you over to the website and you can learn more about the services we offer there.
I love it. Well, you know, you said you're intentionally quiet on Instagram, but you are the biggest cheerleader for us on Instagram. Like when I get a message, I'm like, oh, Tiffany likes this. Oh, Tiffany has it.
I did something right. I
know. It's so good. So while maybe your account is quiet, you are just such an awesome cheerleader for your people. And we love you for that. So thank you.
Thank you. It's such an honor and such a privilege.
I hope you just fell in love with Tiffany just as much as we
love her around these parts. I'm so grateful for her time, and I hope that you enjoyed this and gleaned some really great insights and also took some notes on it. I know I definitely, I've worked with her before, but just getting like some of her pieces of her brain to explain and to talk through, gosh, she's such a talented teacher. Thank you, Tiffany, for doing that. You can learn more about her work at tiffanyurich.com. You can check the show notes. We'll provide that for you. But our whole goal of today's episode was to show you that as you begin to teach online, as you have content on social, as you provide free content on your blog, on your YouTube, on your podcast, as you have courses and online products for people to purchase, this immediately hits the masses and you can't show up there unprepared. Showing up prepared to talk to the masses was one of the most important parts about the future of your business that we had to talk about today. So I'm so glad you were here. Remember, anyone can teach well online
if they know how.